Fight!
Welcome once again to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
I'm Nolan.
And this is episode 86. In the wake of the release of our first bonus episode, which was on the music of Halo.
Absolutely. That was exciting. It's exciting times for NGP.
Ba, da, da, da.
Nice, Kenny. Instead of listening to the soundtrack, we just had Kenny sing to us this last week.
Yeah.
As we prepared and studied. No, so we just released a bonus episode, our first bonus episode, which we're going to do every month now, and it's going to come out at a random time within the month. It's going to be completely secret to you guys until it shows up in your podcast inventory. It's going to be called Elements. Why don't you care to explain kind of what that's about?
Yeah, sure. Basically, we've kind of broken gaming into five elements, I think. We've got story, yeah. Characters, mm-hmm. Music, gameplay,
graphics.
So what we're going to do is talk about one element for one game. So what we just did was the music of Halo. Another possibility could be the gameplay of Skyrim or the graphics of Wind Waker. And we're just going to break down our favorite parts of that element and just go in depth on that one topic. And it's actually proved so far, just the one episode, to be really fun and some extra content, I think.
Yeah, and just a complete breakaway from our normal, you know, our normal grind. So,
for sure.
So our first episode was the music of Halo. So go and check that out. Speaking of music, a question to start off this episode, number 86. Okay. What is an artist or a band that is now deceased, but you still enjoy listening to their music today?
Hmm.
So we're not talking about current artists. We're talking about artists of the past that we would take just a moment to recognize. I mean, so this could be Bob Marley, John Lennon, Elvis Presley. I mean, there's tons.
Yeah, I don't know who's dead. Oh,
you don't know who's dead.
I know a sad one because it was recent, but David Bowie was brilliant, and that last album was really, really amazing. So I was actually listening to him yesterday.
Oh, wow.
That one's a little too
perfect
fresh.
Perfect timing. Yeah, that is really fresh. Kenny?
Can I just be terrible and be like Mozart?
No, I think that's fair.
No,
that's
terrible.
No, that's
completely
don't.
No, it's fair if it's not somewhat legitimate, but I listen to my fair share of classical music. I'm not like just that guy.
Kenny's on that new Mozart track.
That Beethoven.
I love that. I think that's fair. That's good. My two are Kurt Cobain, Nirvana, right?
Yeah.
That's recent, but I mean, that's a while back. But
it's not that recent.
Obviously left prematurely, still had a lot in him to give. And then I've got a second, which is a more recent passing. I don't think as recent as yours, Nolan, but with songs like When Doves Cry and Purple Rain, we can't forget one of the most influential artists of rock and roll era, Prince of Shenandoah.
Nope.
Our protagonist for the retro game of the week, Defenders of Oasis.
That's disrespectful.
I can't.
Overview.
Defenders of Oasis is a 1992 Sega release for the Game Gear handheld system. Did you have a Game Gear? That's the black, wider
giant one. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I had one. I loved that thing.
Now, this is a contemporary of Game Boy, right?
Yes.
I think slightly after, but yes.
Right,
basically
but
same.
Yeah, era. Yeah. It's Sega's response to
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, to the Game Boy. So, You've got your handheld system, and you're looking for a new game to play. In fact, I believe that the Game Gear came out in 91 and didn't come to the States until 92, which is the same year that this game was released. So this is an early game in the lifespan of this handheld system.
Very.
And so you're looking for a game to play. With handheld, I mean, you're usually looking for a quick game. I mean, I think there's definitely some Sonic for some of those handhelds. There was, you know, and I'm talking about different systems, but there's Tetris, there's some Mario stuff. Like, but I mean, handheld,
often kind of want that fast pace, high energy. I think my one good friend who had a Game Gear, I didn't, He played lots of like sports games on it. There was a basketball game that he was always just playing, if I'm thinking of the right system. And that tends to be more the vibe for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're restricted. You're definitely restricted. But this game, Defenders of Oasis, is a JRPG, which Japanese role-playing game. And it's very routine for the genre outside of the fact that Defenders of Oasis chose an Arabian theme over your castles and your knights and your dragons. So, right.
Which was really fun.
It was a really cool idea. I've never played a game like that, honestly. I guess with some current games, you do have some that are set in that kind of setting, with more sand and more and less of that European kind of knight type thing. But with this, you've got to think Aladdin, right? So in the place of castles, think palaces, think genies, and think lots and lots of sand. And that's what you're presented with this. And it is not a small game by any means. It is a long, in-depth RPG.
Yeah, which for the Game Gear was unexpected. I mean, they had a few RPGs on there. Shining Force had a port to the Game Gear. Actually, it was like a separate game, I think, like its own thing. I never played an RPG on mine. I actually stuck to Sonic. So like you're saying, the quick, fast-paced, just platformer at most type of game, which I loved. I thought the Game Gear had a lot to offer, but I never played the full spectrum of the genres it had.
I don't know if I've ever played an RPG on a handheld system, even a current handheld system. My handheld systems back in the day were for in the car type games. I mean, I had my Game Boy with the all the extensions and the accessories so that I could play with a light shining down on it and bigger buttons, and like I had all of that so that I could play in a car. I would have loved an RPG back then, but I don't think I was even introduced to the RPG genre at that point because you just don't have those many options when it comes to handheld systems.
Pokemon was. It wasn't a JRPG, but I consider it in that camp somewhere.
Oh yeah,
but I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's an RPG.
Yeah.
Well, Defenders of Oasis definitely is, and there's no argument about that. Let's talk about our experiences with said game this week.
Gameplay.
So Defenders of Oasis, you pick up and immediately jump in to a really epic or a really epically confusing story, depending on your take. It is the classic, I would say, kind of overused, just good versus evil scenario. The kingdom has had all kinds of trouble, and now things have been cool for a little while. It introduces you to the hero of old, who has the worst heroic hero name
Jamseed
of all time. Yeah, you totally stole my thunder. I wanted to make fun of Jamseed so much. Jamseed, that is the name of the hero that had set everything straight in this kind of Middle Eastern themed kingdom, but he hasn't been around in a long time, and you dive straight into the stereotypical princesses getting kidnapped, trouble going on, the prince has to step up and save the day, and boom, you're in this world and playing. It starts fast and furious, and you go pretty much immediately into fighting some enemies and walking around, and I thought this game did a much better job of kind of blurring the lines between, like, I'm in a city or I'm working on story elements versus I'm in, like, overworld or I'm, like, fighting people. It kind of really felt, at least in the initial parts of the game, really fluid in my mind, kind of overlaying those things. And you jump in and normal RPG kind of stuff. You're killing people to get experience. You're getting money.
Random
in this
encounters.
Case, dinar.
Yeah, dinar. So hold on, because you've gone through so much already.
I'm sorry.
So,
it's just... Wah!
Yeah, like just threw up all the gameplay. Let's move on to the age section. No, so I'm going to go with the first thing, and then we can hit some of the other things. So Jamseed is bad enough, but in the opening scene where you're getting a text scrolling of what's going on, you get Jamseed, Shanandar, Faladun. These are just some of the names that it's throwing out at you.
I don't even mind those that much.
Come on, it's overwhelming one after another.
Mahamud was a little bit ridiculous for me.
The neighboring kingdom?
Yeah, let's not even get stuck on the names of the spells later.
Right.
Once you get spells in this game, they are ridiculous.
Here's the thing. You are, like any RPG, you're thrown in somewhat to a world because they've got to build a world around you. But usually it happens at least through some experiencing of and conversation. But when it lays out the story here at the beginning and it throws about 12 different weird sounding names, you get, I got lost immediately. And I was like, I have no idea what's going on except this central character that saved the world back in the day is named Jamseed. And right. Did they tell the story that Jamseed saved the world, but then right after it didn't work or something?
Well, the evil dude sent this like snake guy in his place, killed Jamseed, and then like took over. And then this other dude came along that I don't remember his name, and killed him. And then the world was at peace. And now you have a new empire that's trying to raise the dude again.
Yeah.
And if you're confused by that explanation, that's actually a better job than the game did.
It's a good
of
representation.
Telling you what was actually going on. Yeah, Nolan actually set you really straight.
It's the most overused just plot line, and I didn't expect anything else really. This was 92, and so that was hot. You get you a evil villain who's taken over, dies, but then comes back. So
yeah, for as original though as they were with setting, because that was fairly original. I mean, obviously you've had some games doing that. We played Prince of Persia, you know, which didn't mind running kind of into that area thematically, but I was hoping because they would do some original things like setting that they were going to do some original things in terms of how they told story or, you know, kind of your plot devices. But it felt all very kind of just stereotypical.
Well, okay, so let's talk about this. One of the things that another thing that threw me off was the explanations in this game. On some things, you have way too much explanation. So I found early on, they're like, when they're trying to tell you what to do next, it's something like, oh no, I can't believe you're going to go southeast to the Cave of Desire that can only be opened with a certain spell that would only be able to be retrieved from the Catacomb of Whispers, which is west, southwest of here. Like, I mean, they lay it out a little bit too thickly. But then in other things, there's absolutely no explanation.
Right.
So when you get spells or items, you have no idea what they do.
Right, right. Absolutely. And part of that, again, is us playing the game today. You know, there was an expectation if you had the game in that day, you had the game because you bought it, and so you had the guide. And that difference shows through so much because, you know, my understanding is that the guide of this game took you through every spell and what it did. But when you don't have that and you're just playing it looking back, you have these random spells with random names and all you know is it's a spell and how much it costs. And you're like, well, let's find out what, you know, Ahmed does when we cast it. Like it just random sort of Persian sounding things and you have no idea.
But then you use it and you kind of still don't know what happened. Like,
oh, yeah. Even then it's not super clear.
And I don't know if the guide even went into it. I don't have proof of that. So show me a guide, and then I'll say okay.
Show me a guide, or it didn't happen. Even later, I don't know how far you got, or even if you got this far but didn't recognize it. But you can, like in some other of these early RPGs, you can get some items that are usable in battle. So there's a very helpful harp that you can get early on, but you have no idea what it does. It just says when you retrieve it, I think it says something like like it plays a beautiful melody or something as simple as that. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you're supposed to know that you can use it in battle and that it's got infinite uses and that it's got a chance to put your enemy to sleep. Which was very helpful. If
yeah,
you could
that's
get
great.
Multiple enemies to sleep, especially that there were certain enemies in that cave that were that would be put to sleep easily, and if not, they will do a lot of damage.
Yeah, I think
so,
sort of like golem types.
Yeah,
the
golems
ones
very necessary to use. Yeah.
Speaking of battles, let's talk about what it looks like. So it's a random encounter, like any JRPG, when you're walking through like a one of the danger areas, whatever. It pulls up a screen of your enemies, and it's just a black background with the dudes on it, and then the health. And that was definitely due to the Game Gear not being able to push out some beautiful backdrop, which I can almost forgive, but, like, I hated looking at that battle screen.
I thought as simplistic as it was, and I would have rather, and we've seen, you know, even more simple games that do a nice job of giving you some setting, thinking Dragon like Dragon Warrior, right? Warrior or yeah. whatever else. But for as simple as it was at least clean and clear, and you got to see your enemies, and I thought the enemies themselves looked good.
I didn't.
You know, I didn't mind the art. For when and what it was, I was okay with it.
All right, don't backtrack now. You said you did, and I agree with you, and right. Nolan said he didn't, and you're like, eh, yeah, but I also don't like it.
No, man, I just did not like it. It was actually a gray background. It is ugly, and like I can picture myself looking at the Game Gear and playing it, and it looks like that old school, like that dungeon crawler game, like NetHack, but not that old. I don't know. It was just hard for me to get past that. I feel like they could have done something.
Nothing looks like NetHack.
Something for the backdrop, but whatever.
We've played other RPGs or JRPGs that have had solid black backgrounds, and they've been on systems. I don't recall right now. I was just trying to look it up. I wasn't able to find it in that amount of time, but we've done that. So I think as long as there's something appetizing to look at, then that's okay. And I agree with Kenny's first statement before he backtracked on himself that you've got something worth looking at. And so battling in these games take up a lot of the time, especially when you need to grind some, which you do in this one. I really liked the flow of the battle, but I can completely see it as an either you're going to really enjoy it or you're going to really hate it. I don't think there's going to be much in between. When it comes to the flow of battle and how you upgrade and how you level up and stuff, did you feel that was pretty consistent and pretty solid, or did you find it pretty flawed?
I liked that choices in these kinds of games are good, but in this case, I'm glad that when you level up, it's like auto-assigned. So you've got your different stats that you gain, so power, speed, willpower, and HP, and you kind of just get more of each, which I liked that was how simple they went with it, rather than me having to assign points, which in most cases I would love that, but I didn't. In this game, I just didn't feel like going into all that. So as far as progression goes, like I didn't have to grind too much, but I didn't get through the whole game, so I can't Sure. say that's how you go through the whole game. I thought the flow was okay.
I felt like there was a decent balance there. I don't mind a little bit of grinding in some of these kinds of games. And I also didn't feel like you had to do it indefinitely. And when you were, your time was a little bit more valuable, kind of getting to your goals, which was nice. But you got a lot of your experience just sort of going through the story and doing things you had to do, as long as you were fighting those encounters and not running away or whatever. And so I felt like it was a pretty natural flow. Nothing super hard to figure out in terms of the mechanics. One or two things that you just have to try it a few times, especially in the case of you know, those spells, but even in terms mm-hmm. of certain attacks and how they worked. Definitely, it was a little surprising when I realized it was a multi-character game.
Loved it,
I kind of started initially, and the way it sets up, you never really see that presentation, and so you sort of assume it's going to be a little bit more like a typical single player, you know, one hero goes forth kind of game. And then in that moment when you finally like grab the lamp and Genie pops up and suddenly he's hanging out with you and you have a huge spike in your power, I went from like kind of barely getting by to get to that point to just like, oh, I'm wrecking everything.
Right.
And it was nice.
And here's what I love about that. You truly feel it. It's not just though that you get another one of yourself. You know, there's some RPGs
right.
where your second player is just another you, and you can just tailor them slightly different, you know, if you've even got that flexibility. A lot of these early RPGs, you only can change them based on what kind of armor and weapons you're giving them. But with this, every single one of your characters, and you ultimately end up with four, are completely different. Even so much so that the genie that you mentioned, I don't know if y'all even caught this because I didn't until somewhat later in my gameplay, is that your stats of the genie do not upgrade in the same way that your
right.
other characters do. So
yeah.
they don't naturally level up based on the enemies that you are defeating. You have to actually purchase and find lamp upgrades that will then
right.
boost his abilities.
You're kind of manually augmenting him separately than like experience grinding as you are with everybody
right.
else.
And I did like that each party member has their own thing. Like you said, they're not just a copy of your main character. Like you have a thief who can do like a hide command where you avoid attack for a turn, which is on, I mean, it's on theme with like his role. And then you've got the genie who's a magic user.
How about that dancing?
I love that. So once again, you don't know what dancing does, but your pirate character can dance, which the first time you try, you're like, all right, what's about to happen? Like, we're just turning this fight into a party.
Monsters start joining in.
Let's just dance.
But the it's really smart to use at times when there's multiple enemies you're facing, because it can do some good damage to each of the enemies that you're facing.
Yeah.
So that it does less than if you were to hit one with just your attack. But you've got these flexibilities. You've got these different elements. And another thing that I really felt in this game, which I don't always feel in RPGs, is the stats. So you know when your HP increases in other RPGs, and you know even when your attack increases. But usually for me, that's about it. But
or it's more like when you get a new weapon, you suddenly feel a big upgrade. But like you hit a level up. And, you know, like you get a little bit more power or whatever, and you're kind of like, eh, it's sort of the same. But that wasn't the case in this case.
Right, because, like, for example, speed is not just if they attack first or where they attack in line, but in how often they attack. And so some of your lighter characters that don't do as much damage maybe as your main attack, they can attack maybe twice before the enemy has a chance to attack. Which is really cool. And another thing, like on the opposite side, is that the genie, his power is really low. So his physical attack is really low, and it doesn't seem to climb that drastically. Well, you've got to learn that you stop attacking with the genie and you start using magic, because his will is through the roof.
Right.
Definitely some of that novelty I enjoyed a lot. I especially enjoyed also that it's not every character casts spells and whatever else. Just, again, the novelty of the gameplay feeling different every time you added a character, and the genie not only giving you a second party member, but the ability to start making more of those involved decisions. You know, early on it was like, hey, I'm pretty much using him as a healer or occasionally to fight. And then as you learn the other spells and progress and figure out a little bit more of the strategy, you go, oh, I don't know if I was really doing that ideally, and it, you know, that role kind of changed. And so there were some novel things there, even though one of my bigger complaints about the game is it a lot of it felt very canned. Some of the things that they did do in a novel or unique way, I felt like, and maybe I'm just mostly it's like plot and story that was getting me there, but the things that they did do in a unique way were notable. They were fun.
I want to hear some of the things that did bother you, either one of you, because we've been talking some good things about this game, and there are some good things. I mean, I think anybody can see that, but it's not a perfect game.
Really, the main things that bothered me were the character models, all of them, including Prince, and because he just looked weird compared to everybody else.
His head was huge.
Yeah. Well, at first I was like, oh, he's got a turban on. It's not a big deal. And then I was like, no, he's just giant. Like,
you might want to clarify. The Prince of Shanadar. If you just refer to him as Prince, especially after Dustin's blunder, folks are going to want him to start singing and they're going to be all confused.
Well, Prince of whatever looked weird. And then the enemies are just strange, like the blob. The blob enemy, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's just
that green blob.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just a little weird. And those are the main things that got on my nerves. But the open world was fine. Another thing that kind of got on my nerves was the music. I'm sorry. I know the theme that they went with was nice. A nice change from what it normally is for RPGs, but the music was repetitive.
See, I dig it. I spent so much time like grinding to repetitive music as a kid that kind of the fun, different, you know, that kind of Middle Eastern Persian tone, what have you. I enjoyed, and I thought it was fine. Again, you know, real old and retro feeling, and so definitely not everybody's cup of tea. It was definitely one when I was playing it around people, and I had the opportunity to a little bit. I was making sure I was putting earphones in, because this isn't the music of Halo. But I didn't hate it.
Yeah. One of the things that I found lacked a little bit, it was story.
That's totally where I'm coming from. It was story and like dialogue and delivery and the mechanics of plot stuff that drove me crazy.
Okay, see, you kind of combined a bunch just there. I liked the gameplay. I liked the battle. I liked the leveling up systems. I liked the graphics. I even liked the music. It was the story that was weak for me, in that it's not one that sucks you in immediately like a lot of these JRPGs do. Like, they pull me in so quickly. I'm all about, like, some good story and some world building. But I played long enough that I got to a point where I was interested to see where it goes. So it's just not one that immediately... What will capture you immediately is setting, I feel like, just because it's so different than what most of these are. And if it can keep you until the point of where the story begins to open up, maybe around chapter 3, which takes a little bit.
Yeah, I think 3 or 4, really, before it starts to pick up.
Yeah, then maybe you'll get glued. But that is a big ask for a lot of people.
Yeah, they even did just some, like, cheesy things in terms of how they went about the plot. Like, suddenly you're fighting this really strong character, and it seems like it's a fight you're supposed to win, and then you get kind of one shot, but you're not actually dead, you just fell asleep. But somehow, in your sleep, you end up in the base of the rebels, which makes no sense. And then, oh, he's got a magic sword, and it's one of those over-explained, under-explained, and they just didn't do their storytelling well. And so, I'm agreeing with you on this one, Dustin.
And I think the big fault that adds to that is I thought the dialogue sucked, too. Like,
Yeah, it did.
I mean, you gotta have some pretty good writing for a JRPG. In general, that's baseline for a good story, and it was not there.
Yeah, you can't just put in a bunch of weird-sounding words and names and then make
makes it a fantasy
right.
Adventure. Yeah. And I get that some of these, I don't know in this case if it was, I'm not sure in my reading this week, but I get that some of these are like ports from literally a like Japanese game. And so sometimes you're going to get dialogue that feels poorly translated, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it wasn't well written. There's a difference here, and this was just lazy and poor dialogue, not just like sort of chunky English dialogue. It was content that was the issue for me.
Aged.
Sega developed and published this game. So we played so many Sega games lately. Now, generally we highly praise Sega games. So far, just statistically, we've played some pretty baller Sega games. And they've all aged okay or really, really good. And that's not the case for all of them, obviously. But in this case, instead of saying we're dealing with a Sega title, I think we should say we're dealing with a handheld title. Because even though Sega developed and published it, they were limited to the Game Gear. So with that being said, I thought it aged like crap.
Nolan always comes to...
I feel like that's kind of a cop-out excuse, though. Like, why? There were some fun titles on the Game Gear.
Like, absolutely. I agree.
It's not like they couldn't have made a really, really excellent game here.
No, listen, hear me out. I don't think it's because... I don't think it was because it was a handheld RPG that it sucked. I think that they messed up the game. So don't hear me wrong. I'm just saying It was near unplayable for me this week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Goodness. Okay, see, and I think completely different. The Game Gear was created in 91, came to the United States in 92, and this game was released in 92. It's one of the first, not the first, but one of the first batch of games that came out for this early handheld system. And with that, I think the artwork was not bad at all with that into consideration. I think that there were some catchy tunes. With any of these early JRPGs, especially when there's a grind, you're going to get some repetition that is annoying. But you get different sounds for caves and towns and overworld. And I'm surprised that that kind of sound came from a handheld system's hardware.
Yeah.
A handheld system that came out in the 90s are usually not known for their quality sound. And I think with that, this game presented and produced well.
But Sonic came out in 92 as well. Now, it's a different genre, sure. But overall, it's just produced better. In my opinion, developed better. I couldn't listen to the music for very long, and it was on theme. I'll give them that. Like, I appreciate that they branched off from the typical JRPG recipe. Now, they obviously kept some of the gameplay elements. You have to, random encounters, leveling up, and then your story driving it. But Yeah, stylistically, I commend them, but execution, no, not there for me.
See, I think my problems with how this game aged tend to be more the problems I've already pointed out and not so much the graphics. Because in my mind, if a game is fun, if it tells a good story, if the characters are intriguing, I don't care if, you know, my cat is represented by an at symbol. You know, we talked NetHack earlier. Like, I don't mind it looking basic. And I thought for when this game came that I did enjoy some of the visuals. I enjoyed the theme and the uniqueness of the place. To me, my beef almost solely with this game was how they went about developing and telling the story. And that will be an immersion breaker regardless of your hardware. And if you don't tell a good story, no matter what, I'm just going to have some things that I've got to get over to get to the place of enjoying it. And I don't know that in my mind that they delivered super well there. In terms of the look and the feel and how easy it was to pick up and everything else, it was a fine game. Like, no major aging hurdles for me.
So for you, yeah. So for you, it wasn't an aging thing. It was more just a decision thing from the start.
Yeah, I think.
But for you, Nolan, it was a little bit of both, but it was for sure aging on your end.
Yeah,
okay.
You know, I might have played this if I was into RPGs at the time when I had my Game Gear and not thought anything of it because I hadn't played Final Fantasy VI or some of the others, like, but just knowing what I know and having to go back and endure some of those things is just, it wasn't fun and just a big hurdle for me this week.
The final shell shock.
All right, we'll go straight for it. Nolan, you were kind of setting it up for the big reveal. Do you give this game your vote for New Game Plus status? Just to let everybody know, this is our general thumbs up or thumbs down, and it requires 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. Should we play this game? Should our viewers go out and find a copy and enjoy this title or move on to the next? Nolan?
No, it's not worth it.
I thought we were going to have to remind you that it was a podcast. For a second, he just shook his head negatively in disbelief. And I was like, that's great for our viewers, but you got to say it.
Like, if you want a reason, it's because it's not fun. And it's not, they just executed wrong. Like, they wanted it to be an original feeling story and have like an RPG on the go. But it's not worth playing. Absolutely not worth playing today. There's so many other games you should play instead of this one. Even handheld titles.
All right. Interesting. We've got one no. I do give it my vote for New Game Plus status, which I wasn't expecting to coming into this game. I think it's a quality game. I haven't even begun to tap into its depth. I absolutely think that there are better games, but I really do like the unique spin on this one. I thought the game had decent flow. I thought the game had quality graphics. I think the game had solid music and a good enough story to keep me interested. And above all that, it's on a handheld system, which I think makes it, for me, an auto win. So I do give this game my vote for New Game Plus status.
You're calling this game a quality game?
Yeah.
We got some shots fired. I like this. I love when we disagree a little bit.
It's like, we don't play it handheld now, though. So, like, it's just like playing a game on a computer.
I mean,
so, like, that perk of it being, like, a handheld on-the-go game is absent. So, now it's just
I kind of played it like a handheld this week, for what that's worth.
What, on your phone?
I played it on a tablet.
But still, sure, you have to play it in a different way, but a lot of these games we're having to play in not its original way, and you still have to take that into consideration.
I still have
to take that into consideration when I'm reviewing the game.
Quality.
I don't compare this to Final Fantasy, but Final Fantasy was a console game. I don't compare it to all these other console games. I'm comparing it to other handheld games, which I was never a huge handheld gamer. And out of the handheld games that I did play, this is a, yes, quality game.
I feel like the next episode we should play Shining Force for the Game Gear just to see. But we can't because that's not how we do our podcast.
Maybe it will randomly get selected.
Oh, maybe.
That would be... I mean, I'd play another RPG. I love RPGs.
Kenny, what do you give this
game? Ultimately, it doesn't matter that you guys disagree because two of us have to agree fully. So here's what summarizes this game for me. There was a moment...
Hey, everybody take 10 and then come back and you'll hear Kenny's answer.
There was a moment early in the game, not far into the game at all, where you are walking down this hall in the castle and there's this bookshelf. Literally, this bookshelf represents this game for me. When you're walking down the hall of this castle and you see this bookshelf and I went, that's a secret passage.
No, you didn't.
I did, literally. I was just like, I went up and I pushed on it and I hit buttons and I, because it just seemed so overtly obvious to me that it was a secret passage. And your passages ought to be secret. I think for me, the heavy-handedness of how they went about telling story, even though I loved the setting with Dustin, and I'm with you, if they had just been better at it, I thought mechanics were fun, I thought adding your characters was cool, getting the genie was a boss moment, and some of the spells, figuring that out, there were moments I had fun with this game, but overall, comparing it to a game that's just like reeks of quality, and that I would tell everybody, hey, you ought to go out and play this for sure... To me, the secret passages were too obvious. To me, they weren't good enough at telling the story and giving you a setting to explore. And it was too linear in places, and it was too overly given to you in places, and you didn't have to figure things out in other places. The way they went about world building, I didn't enjoy. It was more distracting to me than the fun elements were fun. And so, though I live really kind of right in the middle of you guys, there were things I loved and things I didn't love about this game. Ultimately, it doesn't get New Game Plus for me.
Which means it does not get New Game Plus from New Game Plus. And so, move on to the next game. If you want to be wrong, but if you want to be right, you can always pick it up and play it.
I mean, sure.
We received a couple of... thoughts from our viewers this week. One was from Nick, and he said, hey guys, I honestly didn't like this game at all. The battle system is really restrictive, and I did not find myself relying very much on good strategy, but instead just hoping I'm strong enough to continue. I like the old Dragon Quest game a whole lot more. I feel like this game, however, was incredibly dated even when it came out.
I think that's a kind of fair assessment. There was a little bit of that, like, you were strong enough or you weren't in these fights. At some point, you're almost just, like, one-shotting enemies. And then before then, they're actually kind of tough. And I'd love a little bit more, like, if you can figure the enemy out and go about it the right way, it works. But, I think he struggled with some of the same things some of us did.
Antonin also wrote in, hey guys, I played along this week and honestly don't have many thoughts on the game. It feels a lot like Dragon Warrior for one thing, and otherwise it feels rather blah. One thing I'll give them big props for is the simple fighting system. Very clear cut and very straightforward.
Yeah, you want stuff to be understandable.
But those are the qualities that I really enjoyed in this game, that it was very clear cut, very straightforward. I do agree, Kenny, that it went a little overboard with that and the explanation of what to do and what you're doing, but... I thought that there was a charm that was unique in this game. Thank you for sending in your thoughts and your commentary this week, for emailing us at ngppodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to include your thoughts on our next game, and just shoot us an email by the end of the week. We usually record Saturday morning, and we'd love to include your email and your thoughts on the game as a part of our show next week. Until then, we're going to randomly select our next retro game of the week from our expansive Retro Master list.
Yeah, it is time.
It is an incomplete list that we would love your game suggestions on. The only stipulation is that the game has to be 15 years old or older. Any system, handheld or console, PC or lesser. And we
say that. Any video game. If you send us board games or tabletop games or just tell us to play tic-tac-toe, paper top games,
we'll still play it.
We'll just put it in the podcast. Yeah.
Snake on an old Nokia phone. Whatever.
Dude, we'll hop on it. Without further ado, we will randomly select the next game that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days, and it is... A game that came out in 1989, and you're going to love it, guys, because it is a vehicular combat video game, which we have learned to love on this show.
Oh, maybe it'll redeem the genre. Let's see.
No, it will.
I'm not optimistic.
Well, it gets better because it's called Cobra Triangle.
It doesn't make it better, honestly.
It came out on the original Nintendo Entertainment System. And it was developed by Rare and published by Nintendo.
Those are both positives.
How do we not know about this game?
So what does that mean?
Yeah, I don't know. And I love a lot of our NES titles. Not all of them, but you guys know I'm rather fond of that system. So I'll at least give it the benefit of the doubt. Maybe its name at least makes sense, unlike Vigilante the Ocho. Eight. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was we'll rough. See.
All right, well, Cobra Triangle, we'd love for you to play with us this week. Send in your thoughts. We can talk about it throughout the week in our Discord channel.
Yeah, we can. Listen, guys, we have this awesome Discord where our viewers and patrons and everyone hang out during the week. And I noticed this week, I told Dustin that I love the little community that we have in there. It's grown a lot.
So
there's always people in there. And everyone's super nice, other content creators. So just come and hang out with us. There's links to that on our Twitter. And yeah, we talk about the retro game of the week. We talk about off-topic stuff, and we'd love to have you drop in there.
Yeah, we've definitely got to take a minute and say thank every single one of you that takes the time out of your week to listen to this podcast for giving us your time and your ears and your attention. We appreciate it. But especially to those of you who go above and beyond by supporting the work that we do and help us continue to make arguably excellent content for you, for those who are interested in old video games. And so to those of you who are our patrons, support us on Patreon, we are so appreciative at all the different levels, especially our producers, Bradley and Zion. You guys are great, but everybody else who helps make this thing a reality, you guys are awesome, and we're so appreciative.
And we do want to welcome a new patron, Dan, the family. Thank you, Dan,
Thanks, Dan.
For choosing to pull the trigger and support us. We promise that the content, both regular and the extra secret behind the scenes content that we're able to send your way because of your support, is going to be fun and regular and engaging. Speaking of engagement, you can follow us on our social media, Facebook and or Twitter at NGP Podcast. Listen to us directly on any of your podcast providers, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Music. If you get a moment, go and leave a nice review. That always helps us with visibility, helps other people find and locate our podcast. Word of mouth is huge too. If you know anybody that plays video games or likes old video games, tell them about our podcast, and we'd love to welcome them into the family as well. Patreon.com/NGP podcast is our behind the scenes and entrance into the deeper family that we are creating here. So make sure you check that out. Join us next week as we play Cobra Triangle. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm hyped for an NES game.
And I'm Nolan.
And this has been New Game Plus.